Hello, I'm Hillary McClure, Vice President of Multimedia Productions at Cybercrime Magazine. Welcome to Cybersecurity CMO, a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series where we discuss with some of the top chief marketing officers in cyber how they got to where they are, how they help differentiate the companies that they work for, and how they help those organizations grow and more. I'm here today with Melissa Goldberger, Chief Marketing Officer at SafeBreach. Welcome, Melissa. Thanks for coming on to Cybersecurity CMO.
Thanks, Hillary. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. And so, Melissa, I'd love to start our discussion with you telling us about how you got to the role of CMO, thinking, you know, can you share as much as you'd like, but about education, experiences, et cetera.
Oh, wow. It's been quite the journey. So I will say, anybody looks at my LinkedIn profile, the first thing out of their mouth is, oh my God, you did not take a traditional journey to being a CMO, especially in cyber. I was talking when I was interviewing for the SafeBreach role, I was meeting with a couple of companies, and it was always like the first 2 minutes was like, why am I talking to this person? And because it was a recommendation usually from an investor or someone, no one understood. But then the more we kept talking, they're like, oh, she really knows what she's doing. And that's because I spent the first half of my career, 10 years in non-for-profit. I worked for the UN Association, and then I followed my CFO to the Public Relations Society of America. And they're really large associations with heavy budgets, but definitely not cyber. And I woke up one day and said, I want to take all my marketing skills that I was using and move that to tech. And, you know, still nobody was hiring me at the salary at that point. I was a VP of marketing, and I got to be a VP of marketing, just really just hands-on, consistently just doing a solid job, talking to a lot of people and really learning. Like, I never worked for an amazing CMO like a lot of my friends. Like, I was just that person reporting into a CEO. And then all of a sudden I lucked out and ended up at a company called 451 Research. I'm sure many of your listeners know 451. They're working with them, and it was heading a program called Voice of the Enterprise. So I was interviewing CISOs and CIOs. And from there, I just really grew inside of tech. And then I fell into another company called Argyle Executive Forum that did high touch events for CISOs. And there I met my CEO at the time. He came from cyber background. So when he left Argyle, he and I worked very well together. And after a few months, he had an opportunity at Capsule 8, and he used to call me Goldberger. He's like, Goldberger calls me up. He's like, I need you to be my CMO here. Capsule 8. And I was like, are you crazy? I don't come from cyber. And I was like, how am I doing that? He said, I know. Listen, you're not going to definitely get the job. Well, why don't you just start interviewing with us? Let's see. But he goes, I think we have a really complicated product, and everyone we're talking to is full of cliches, and just, it's just a buzzword lingo. And I think you just take a very fresh take. You understand cyber. You know how to talk to CISOs. You've been doing it for the last 8 years. Try and switch. So yeah, and I went through a very rigorous process, ended up through their board. Not sure at the time, and it was a very impressive board as well. Arcavello is the chair, Bessemer, a lot of people work with like Jay Leak. Like, I had to get through these guys. And to this day, I still talk to everyone. Capsule 8 was a great success. And we got acquired by Sophos. And then we got acquired. I moved on to SafeBreach. And now this is only my second full-time cyber gig. But yeah, it's been amazing. And I owe a lot of it, I have to be honest, switching was to two people, was 451 Research for giving me that break, and then Scott Kennerly for as well as just bringing me on. And that combined, I will say, it was probably my NYU degree as well, my MBA, that really helped, because that was the first thing Scott noticed when he was interviewing me at Argyle. He went to NYU as well and was like, I like it. And that kept the conversation. So different path. So, but yeah, so no certifications, nothing fun or anything, just great people.
I mean, that's a fun story though. It's a fun journey, and I love hearing it. And when you said buzzword, I was thinking back to my, cause I'm in, I'm doing this now, but my previous lives were ad agencies and experiential marketing. And we used to play buzzword bingo on calls with clients all the time. Because there's just so much jargon.
Oh my gosh, right? It's funny. And then now I find myself, which is so funny though, right? You'll find yourself, I'll catch myself saying a certain word. Totally. And everybody's using word now. The new word I've just noticed was like unparalleled. Like in cyber, like it's everywhere. It's like, it's the most random word. Why? It's just a wasted word even. So, and it's so funny because when everyone talked to me about cliches in cyber, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And the more and more, I just looked like, God, we all look and we all sound alike. And it's hard. Even I'm doing it now. I think maybe it's definitely... Yeah, I've totally come in. And I think that's what I love about cyber, though we can laugh about this. I think it's one of the few areas I didn't, when I was on the media side, I didn't feel we would laugh at ourselves. We almost took ourselves too seriously. And here we definitely, we get it, I think, as marketers. And I think it's just such a great group to work with, as in, you know, and I have to say, coming up through cyber later in my career, I'm really lucky that I've just had some amazing, really mentors to work with internally and just through other cyber companies, and people are always willing to help in terms of partners. So it's just, it's such a great community.
Yeah, that's a great segue into, I guess, just to quickly touch, I was going to ask you next, you know, what was the transition into cybersecurity like? Because I know, you know, it is new for lots of folks and we're trying to retain more talent and all of that. So it's always fun to hear what that journey's been like for folks as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, you know, I was lucky in the sense that I had the great group at Capsule 8. Our CEO is fantastic, and our board. But who really helped educate me was that position was very lucky. I inherited a team, unlike Safe Breach, where I had to hire, built out my team from zero to, I think we're 16 right now, or two from 16. And there, I had an amazing communications director, and she, and an amazing VP of product strategy, Kelly Shortridge. She's pretty well known, and both of them just really educated me. And I'll never forget Kelly saying to me, Melissa, you did interviews in cloud, you were at 451, you're fine, you're going to get it. And they really kind of took me and assimilated. And then I stumbled upon, obviously, networking groups like the Cyber Marketing Society, having great PR firms that really were able to educate me. And then most important, talking to our customers. The more I talked to CISOs and our customers, I think they almost appreciated the fact that I was so eager to learn. And it just, not to sound cliche or buzzy, but it just really, I evolved as a marketer from that point on, because I was really understanding everybody's needs from that point and looking at different angles. So it was just taking all the resources that were in front of me and using them. And I wasn't scared to, I wasn't above it. You know, in a lot of cases, I think when, and I've had this feedback at times in my career, you know, as a CMO, you need to kind of be above it all, where I sit in the thick of it. Like I am getting on all the analyst calls. I am on my PR weekly calls, where even though I have a communications team that could do it, especially early on, I just wanted to learn everything. Where now, obviously, my teams handle it, but definitely early on, it was just getting in and listening to anything I can, sales calls as well.
Yeah. And I want to come back to your, you know, building out your team in a little bit, but first, it's kind of a loaded question, but I feel like you started to touch upon it when you started talking about speaking with customers, because and it could go so many different ways, but for you, why is marketing so important?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I mean, for marketing, it's to tell that story. I think there's so much pain right now, especially in cyber, and there's so many directions of where you can go. And sometimes you just don't know what you don't know. And, you know, going into cliche and buzz, right? We used to say, what is it? It's not if, it's when it happens now. And I don't know if, because you're so buried, people don't always have the time to learn every single thing they learn. So if we as marketers can tell stories in interesting, succinct ways that are human, it is important. And to understand, again, cliche, God, I really am assimilating, people's pain, right? And to share that and to broadly share it, I think it makes you more comfortable with what's uncomfortable, right? Like, I know coming from, you know, where we are right now in breach and attack simulation, people weren't talking about proactive security 5-6 years ago when this was a much newer area, right? People are still like focused, okay, I'm just more focused on hygiene or my EDR. And now it's people are like, no, I can't be reactive anymore. I have to be proactive. And a lot of that I have to say is because of good marketing and getting out there and sharing that, and marketing so many different things now, right? And the other area for marketing is just in general, just employees, right? Your number one brand ambassadors are your employees. And if your company doesn't have good marketing, you're not going to hire good talent. And I can tell you for us, you know, and this is not to diminish any of the work that my predecessors have done because they did an amazing job. But on the surface, sometimes the marketing just wasn't there and we couldn't attract great talent for that. People would come to our website and say, I'm not sure. And we'd have to work really hard. And our HR team would say to me, Melissa, how do we change this? We're hearing once people come into the company that the culture isn't reflected out there in our marketing. So I think that's also very important, especially as hiring gets harder and harder, regardless of where the economy is. We do have the opportunity to be more selective in which jobs and which companies we work for.
Among many other things, you drive forward the strategy, planning, and reporting for your teams, as you mentioned earlier, hopping on calls with analysts. So it is, living in spreadsheets, that life, but as well as projecting market growth. And at the end of the day, you're helping to tell that compelling story that you also mentioned earlier. Melissa, what's your recipe for success and your reason for being as far as wanting to be in this role?
Well, it really is just, and again, it goes back to people. I think it's the ability to just, to the point of, like you said, telling, first of all, being able to amplify the story, tell the story, be able to help really large enterprises and really create something new for them. But then also not only in my current roles, just in all of my roles, I've been my teams that I've been with. I've been very selective of the types of companies I've been with. Even when I was in nonprofit, they were very mission-driven. And when you're in a mission-driven company, it attracts a certain type of talent and it just makes it great to follow through every day and to get up and go to work. Like I have the most fantastic team, both in my direct reports and just everybody, our whole go-to-market, our product teams in Israel. We just have this great culture. And I think that for me, that's where, my being is. And then of course, when you see these great comments from our customers, like I'm back and forth actually with one of our advisors right now on just an event we're doing. And it's just fun to be able to go talk about, hope you're enjoying your vacation and just build that connection. I think that's just really important. And, of course, the products always. Always the product is my purpose of being. No matter where you are, I could be selling the worst product. It's always the product, but.
So you mentioned building out a team at SafeBreach, which you said you've grown from about, I think you said 2 to 16, which that's a lot. I mean, in addition to everything else that you are learning and doing, like that's a lot of hiring. That's a lot of interviewing. That's a lot of building. But I guess what teams are at SafeBreach report to you? Who are those teams? I think a lot of people sometimes, at least in my experience in the marketing world, they can think it's really glamorous and they don't really understand everything that goes into it. And I always would joke, well, no, that's PR, but no offense to PR people listening. and I never did PR, so I can't say that's true, but yeah, like what teams report into you and how does that all, what are the inner workings like, I guess?
I think that, no, it's really great, right? Because the funny thing about marketing, especially in B2B or cyber, whatever you want to say, every marketing team, I think, is different. There's no recipe, like exact science of how it should report. So for us, we're unique in the sense I have sales development that reports into me. So I'm going to go lower funnel up. So we have sales development that reports into me. And in some cases, in other companies, they do report into sales, but they report to marketing. I also have product marketing that also reports to me. And then we have demand gen. And then we have content. In some cases, I've been in companies where I've had content under demand gen, but I keep content separate because they're content and communications. So they'll handle like PR, AR, all that as well. And then we have regional marketing, or some people know it as field marketing. Those are the core. And then, of course, the backbone of our team is marketing operations, and they really handle just so much for us, more than marketing ops. They almost serve as rev ops to a degree along with our sales team. So we have a really tight team and we work super closely with sales. And the bulk of the hiring was all done in a matter of 4 months, if you can believe it. So definitely, yeah, and a lot of interviewing. And I'm really proud that we've had great retention on the team. So although the team is fairly new, it's about a year old, everybody's relatively happy and, know, as happy as anybody is, and just really productive. And what's exciting is just to see the integration, not only within our team from especially the sales development side, to marketing, but how closely sales development works with the sales team as well as product marketing. They really work so closely with the product team, and it just kind of brings us together as a whole company. And then we just brought in a great consultant to help bridge the gap between customer success and us. So we have that. So really just across the company being kind of creating marketing as that hub, right? And being sure that we can communicate outwardly inside the company as well.
Very cool. I feel like you really like crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's on how everyone can work together and finding those people. Like that seems very holistic, which is amazing. I'm sure they all really value each other and being able to, you know, work with each other and bounce things off each other. All those things work together so, you know, intimately that it's so important. That that makes a lot of sense hearing you. And yeah, you're right. Every team is different, but that makes a lot of sense how you built that out.
And we know it's really weird. It's like, we don't have silos on our team. I've been to this point. I had a much larger team when I was at Argyle, and it was just so siloed from the rest of the company, even though we were kind of supposed to be kind of the center of the hub. And it wasn't that way. And there's just no silos within marketing or within the company. And this, the team, just like you, to your point, the word holistic, they just really work well together. You know, our strategy continues to organically grow, even though I do love to lead by deck, as they like to say. But if you can find, you know, I've yet to meet someone, CMO doesn't love a good PowerPoint. That's where I am traditional. They really, and it's like always, it's our strategy. It's not, nobody's ever like, oh, it's just Melissa's strategy or the company's. It's together. And it's always a lot of feedback. And that's something I think that's also really unique for us. And I think part of that's also just the culture, is because although we're headquarters in San Francisco, we also have a headquarters in Israel. So I think just cross-culturally, we have very different communication styles, but they blend really well. Transparency is really important to us as an organization, as a team, and everybody's really direct in a polite way. And it's the first company I've ever encountered that in. And it's absolutely amazing to have that.
Diving a little deeper into strategy planning, et cetera, how do you think the cyber criminal activity, and you also mentioned this earlier a bit, but you know, how do you think all of the cyber criminal activity that we've been witnessing is impacting marketing trends and strategies?
I mean, I'd probably be wrong if I said it's helping.
I get it though.
From cyber. I should, like today, CISA had, or yesterday, there was an announcement. It was literally like direct for us, where it was like, you should be using proactive approaches to test. And but at the same time, it's hard not to ambulance chase, right? Because that is out there. And I think people get a reaction that they want to chase that and capitalize it. So I think at the same time, it makes it a little more difficult, right? Because you want to be sensitive to people's needs when all this activity is happening, but you also do want to say, we're here to help you. So I think it actually makes it harder to find that balance. I can't tell you how many times we'll have conversations of saying, but we really have a unique proposition here, but it's like, I want to be mindful. Like I'll give Log4j was always a great example, right? Every company under the sun was out there trying, and it was so, you know, we made the decision not to capitalize externally on that. And I'm proud of that decision because we wanted people to do what they needed to do. At the same time, what we did do is focus on helping our clients, our existing clients, and what our product can do for them. And that was really important. So I think it's finding that balance of helping your clients and then communicating it. Now, having said that, for example, I have a campaign launching right now that's literally around cyber warfare, more around the TV show at the BBC, and working that and using that education, but in a way that doesn't, you know, have FUD in it. And that is educational. And it's just, again, that storytelling and humanizing what's happening out there. It's definitely changed the playing field a lot. At the same time, too, it's also created a lot of noise in the market. Finding that balance has been the most important thing, though, I will say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess to build on that, how do you build a category and shift from should to must have? Because that is something that we've been seeing, but how do you go about that?
It's interesting, right? Because I feel just like kind of the team building, there's no recipe. It's what's finding out. And interesting enough, you know, the current market conditions complement, you know, certain products better than others. And we know cyber tends to do well, right, when they're different conditions in there. But I think it's using all the tools that you have at you. And I think the two biggest ones, right, are your advocates and your customers. And it's hard, right, when you don't have, when you're Series A and you don't have those customers, how do you get them, right? So using your connections, building that base and building that movement early on. I tend to work in later stage companies. So it's so hard when you come in a later stage and you see things like not taking advantage of things like Gartner peer reviews, having that out there. People buy from other people, especially CISOs, right? It's all about your customer and them and their voice and sharing. So if you're really trying to engage that story, it's you have to have that base and that movement and showing what the impact is. What is the ROI early on? The other area is, and it's, this one's a big cliche, is taking advantage, and maybe it's because it came from 451, of course, analyst firms, they're still very important, especially if you're selling enterprise. People, I can't tell you how many times, especially recently, that I will get leads coming from Gartner and people saying, we heard about you through a Gartner report or something like that. So staying on top of that is extremely important because people are now vying for that budget. The final way is communicating above your buyer. I think, you know, I joke, every cyber company, who do you want to market to? The CISO. Why are we better? We have the best technology. We sell to enterprises, right? Like, those are the three things. And that to me is worth a buzzer big. I'll be taking shots all day when I hear that. But having said that, in all seriousness, it's important for you to look above the CISO. Whether it's where they're reporting, are they reporting into a board? Is it CFO, the CIO, or is there directional reporting? Having them understand the value of your product to their company, especially now that security is, I think it was something, I saw some one weird stat the other day, like 60% of corporate boards are talking about security. So having them understand, right, CISO's bonuses are tied to some of that. So really, and because we know risk is tied to revenue. So making sure that that chain of C-suite understands what your product's doing. And then of course the user, right? It's how many times I know I don't buy my own marketing products anymore. My team recommends them. I'm the one who signs, hands them the $20 to go to the mall. I'm the one who signs the contract. But besides that, it's really important to have that user buy-in. So I think that really shifts it, because when you have your team saying, I need to have this, it's going to make my job better. It's going to make me a better employee. And then on the top of that, on the other side of this is going to create a more effective company and secure growth, that is a key to success. So those three areas.
Melissa, transitioning now, I'd love to know what's been one of your biggest challenges in your career so far.
Probably the initial transition into from nonprofit into tech, especially as a woman. I always felt I had to prove myself a little and work a little bit harder and prove more. During that time period, I had a two-year-old. I went and got my MBA over those 5 years, which is absolutely amazing. And I was traveling back and forth to London and just absolutely burnt myself out. So I think that was definitely the hardest point. And I think especially as women, we think we have to do it all. And it took that burnout at that point in time to realize we don't. And it's okay to admit it, and to just talk to someone and say no. I know, again, I think that's my fifth cliche today. Yeah. And just say no. And now it's, and it's not no, but, right? It's yes. And really turning into that. But I will say that was probably the biggest lesson for me. And that was, smack mid-career, or I guess I am in mid-career now, but, in my early 30s, just saying, I'm putting too much on myself. I need to take a little bit of a step back. And I think COVID, one of the only positives of COVID, I will say, it forced us to take, when we started working remote, taking a little step back. We were burning ourselves out in different ways, but I think now we're more comfortable talking about like self-care, burnout, things like that, because of all these swings that have happened between Great Resignation and stuff. So that change for me was so important. I'm glad I will never forget, that happening in my career. And I think it was the most important thing, because it also made me, for me as a leader, made me more vulnerable to my teams. And that's, really how I roll is through that vulnerability.
That was wonderful. And I guess what's an opportunity now that you have as CMO with everything in context, all of your experience, all of that, what are you looking forward to?
I just love mentoring. I have to tell you, I enjoy really, and especially women, and it doesn't matter. It's everybody. I love watching my teams grow. My daughter teases me. She's like, you always have like four or five favorites. I'm like, that's just the people I work with. But she goes, you spend so much time with them. And I just love coaching and watching them progress in their careers in different places in the different areas. And when they come to me and ask me for advice, I really love serving as that coach. I mean, that's what keeps me and that's what I see next. And then just taking that. And then on a professional level, I just really love enabling business in general and helping make those broader decisions because I know I'm helping the entire company. It's not necessarily about the revenue or the impact. It's just about the people who are making the products. So
well,
for me,
that's a nice segue into my final question.
The way I market, everything just comes back to
the
people.
What are any final thoughts coaching or advice you have for our audience?
Definitely be yourself in terms of marketing. Don't try and be. I see so many people, especially as CMOs, I see some that definitely try to have an air to them. And I do find that over time that that wanes. And I think it's just focusing, really finding that great product that keeps you passionate in that project or that purpose or that mission. And stay with that. I think it's really important. And not to be scared to ask for help and people to mentor. There's so many people like through my career that have brought me on an amazing journey. And I'm grateful to do that for others. And I think that's just human nature. And I think so many people are scared to look for that mentorship. And so that would definitely be my piece of advice for people. And then the final one is, believe it or not, is there's a lot of value in your education, one way, shape, or form, if you can swing it. The most opportunities came to me when I did finish my MBA. And I did it, you know, in my 30s. And it definitely, like I said, it opened the door to security for me because that's where I met Scott, you know, through Argyle, that CEO. And it was, he saw that I had that NYU degree. And to this day, that network really, it enables me a lot.
Fantastic advice. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today and discuss your career. And I just really enjoyed hearing everything that you had to say. And I think it was really thoughtful. So just thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm Hillary McClure, Vice President of Multimedia Productions at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining us today was Melissa Goldberger, Chief Marketing Officer at SafeBreach. You can find Melissa on LinkedIn, and you can listen to other episodes of Cybersecurity CMO, as well as our other podcast series at cybercrime.radio.